This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. This week on Capitol Hill, both the Senate and the House plan to hold hearings on broadcast indecency. The impetus is last week's Super Bowl halftime show featuring Janet Jackson and Justin Timberlake. But even before that breast-bearing incident, there were plans for the government to toughen its stance on brazen broadcasting. 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, Federal Communications Commission Chairman Michael Powell asked Congress to beef up the monetary fines for off-color broadcasts. The FCC also proposed a $755,000 fine against Clear Channel Communications for a Florida shock jocks radio show, Bubba the Love Sponge. The fact that the FCC has received some 200,000 calls complaining about the Super Bowl show suggests Americans are fed up with indecency and vulgarity in the media, or at least very concerned. And there is nothing really new about that. Ever since TV began, people have worried about its effects. Do violent acts on TV encourage people to be more violent? Does televised lewdness loosen our morals? The answer is not a simple yes or no. Few things regarding human behavior can ever be boiled down to simple cause and effect. But who has the upper hand right now? We'll explore that question today. We'll talk with a social scientist who asks kids what they think about sex in the media, and with an anthropologist who's looking at the issue of sexuality and culture throughout history. And we want to hear what you think. Give us a call at 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Does the media lead or follow when it comes to accepted standards? But first, let's start with a look ahead at the activity on Capitol Hill this week. With me here in Studio 3A is NPR's Larry Abramson. Hi, Larry.
Hi, Joe.
So what are these hearings this week? What's planned?
Well, there's actually going to be two simultaneous dueling hearings in the House and in the Senate this week, which is a little unusual and a sign of how eager lawmakers are to weigh in on this issue. As you indicated, there were hearings just 10 days ago on this very same subject before the Super Bowl came out, and I think lawmakers want to make absolutely 100% clear to the Federal Communications Commissioners, who will be there, that they're not messing around this time. They really want them to crack down. And the real discussion will have to follow, and that's exactly how do they do that.
And these hearings really did spring out of the Super Bowl incident, or
yes.
Will they say, oh, we were planning these anyway?
No, I think this time they really weren't. And the funny thing was that they did the other hearings a few days before the Super Bowl. Those were prompted by an obscene, allegedly indecent utterance by the rock singer Bono during last year's Grammy Awards. And that prompted the hearings just a few days ago. I think you mentioned who has the upper hand. I think that belongs to the media watchdog groups right now, who have been pounding the table trying to get more attention to this issue. And they probably owe a great debt of gratitude to Janet Jackson right now because she has given them the attention that they themselves couldn't generate on their own.
So what can the FCC actually do? What's their role? Is it a defined role regarding indecency?
It is a defined role, but it is a role that's defined in a complicated way. The original statute that created the agency, and I believe it's in the 20s, says that the FCC may not censor the airwaves. They may not block broadcasts. But a sentence later, it says no one will utter obscene or, I believe, indecent words on the airwaves, and they will not appeal to prurient interests. So the FCC is supposed to police both of those things. They're not supposed to edit things before they're broadcast. But after they're broadcast, they do have a role of responding to complaints and frequently handing out fines. And that's pretty much all they can do, although it really never happens, but I think some people would like to see happen, is that they could yank the licenses from some of these radio and TV stations if they think that there is enough pressure for them to really get strict.
So is that really their biggest stick, is to yank the licenses or impose monetary fines, or have they some other change they can recommend? Seems to me, once upon a time, they moved certain kind of talk to later in the evening, and there was supposed to be family hour and that kind of thing.
Well, yeah, those things were generally agreed upon by the networks. There is a general finding that you can move rougher language to later in the evening. That's one of the controversies about the Janet Jackson thing, is that it happened right in prime time during one of the most popular family programs. There have been moves in Congress to try to set this in stone and make sure that the family hour is more strictly observed. I don't hear that much talk about that right now. I think what they're trying to do is just to clean up the general tenor of the discourse on television. And as you know from having watched this stuff, it's pretty difficult to say, well, what exactly is it that bothers me? And yes, obviously Janet Jackson bothers a lot of people, but what about all the other stuff out there that bothers people? Where do you weigh in and say, well, OC is bothering me, but you know, some other show, it doesn't bother me. It's not easy, and it's not an area where the FCC has really been very very aggressive in the past.
Okay, well, it sounds like this is one of those things that the FCC comes and visits every once in a while. There's a lot of activity, then it sort of slacks off, so we may see some changes, and then it may go quiet again for a while.
That's the history. I remember after Columbine, there were hearings again about violence in television, and there was a conviction that something was going to change, and nothing really did. So it is very likely that this will come and go. We may see a few more fines from the FCC. We are already seeing the networks getting more timid, I suppose some people would say, or cleaning up their act a little bit. They've edited a few things out. They uninvited Janet Jackson to the Grammys. They kept the appearance of somebody's breasts out of the ER program last week. You know, whether that's really going to lead to a wholesale change in, say, reality TV programming, that's a pretty big leap, but it's not impossible.
Thanks, Larry.
All right, thank you, Jim.
NPR's Larry Abramson joined us here in Studio A. Now joining us now is David Walsh, the president and founder of the National Institute on Media and the Family in Minneapolis. He joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Walsh, we've just been hearing about the parade of media and entertainment executives going before Congress this week and the FCC's possible changes to some regulations that they've currently have in place or adding new ones. Do you think the media is creating the social norms or reflecting them?
I think it's really both. You know, a lot of times that gets put in an either-or context, and I think it's very much both. It's interesting that the media executives, when they're on the defensive, they say that they're just reflecting cultural norms. When they are selling advertising time to companies, they, of course, talk about leading the social norms. MTV has a slogan that they use in their advertising, any channel can deliver eyeballs, how many can include hearts and minds? And so I think the media really do both reflect and lead.
Is this? I don't want to be crass about this, but we're always asked in the media, as journalists anyway, to follow the money. Is this really being driven by what's going to sell advertising? Do you think?
I think you just put your finger right on it. I think, you know, there's so much competition right now, and everybody has become so desensitized, and so you put those two things together, and the networks or the broadcasters have to keep pushing the limits to get attention. You know, when we remember that the role of the content is to deliver audiences to advertisers, then what that means is that what I have to do if I'm in charge of content is to get your attention. And my background is psychology. I've known for years that if you want to get someone's attention, the way to do that is to deliver an emotional jolt. That's what emotion does. But I make more money if I can deliver the emotional jolt for the least amount of production cost. And so when you look for cheap jolts, there are certain things that are more reliable than others. And sex and violence, two things that you've already mentioned, go to the top of the list, which is why there is so much and why there's a growing amount of it.
But I'm also interested, you can get people's attention with a jolt like that, but do you actually change their behavior? Because
well,
that's another thing that
yes.
People, psychologists say it's easy to change people's attitudes. It's hard to change their behavior.
I think what the media are particularly good at is defining social norms. There are some very striking examples of that. One is about 30 years ago in Mexico when they were trying to increase the rates of adult literacy. And they tried a number of things unsuccessfully. And then finally in 1973, Miguel Sabidos decided to try an experiment. He was the producer of the most popular soap opera on Mexican television at that time. And for 6 months, he cleverly and consistently wove pro-adult literacy messages through the plot of his program. In the 12 months following that experiment, registrations in adult reading classes across Mexico increased by 800%. That's power, and the power to influence norms is one of the greatest things in media. That's why, you know, for example, we don't allow tobacco advertising on television or radio anymore, because the research is very clear that that increases the rates of youth smoking. And so there are many, many examples of the link between what's on the screen and then attitudes. And then attitudes are, of course, the precursors of behavior. The research in violence, for example, is very conclusive that the link between violence on the screen and aggression in kids is very clear.
So I'm just wondering, if we go back to the Janet Jackson event in terms of dictating social mm-hmm. norms, I mean, is that a situation where we're going to go to a time when people will just accept seeing some nudity or partial nudity on television, or were parents sufficiently upset that that's not the social norm that they want to approach?
I think that's what we're seeing. I think that the Janet Jackson incident, which was only, of course, 2 seconds long, and so people are saying, why is this such a big deal? I think it was what I'm calling the perfect storm, that a number of things came together. One, as you already alluded to in your other comments, it happened in the midst of the ultimate family viewing event. Probably more families watched the Super Bowl than any other television program on during the year. There's been a growing concern that parents have about sexual content in television and other media as well. And at the National Institute on Media and the Family, we track parental attitudes. 77% of the parents report that they are concerned about sexual content. Interestingly, 75% of the teenagers themselves report that they believe that media depictions of sex on television influence their and their peers' norms. And so the concern is growing. So it happened in the family viewing event, a growing concern. And then there's been an ever edgier and more sexually explicit pattern that's been developing in television. So you put those three things together, and then finally, there's a 2 second event where parents can say, ah, there it is. There's proof positive that we have gone over the line. And I think that's why it has become such an enormously talked about incident.
I'm just curious now. I gather you're a parent.
Yes.
So let's personalize this. I can yes. First, in full disclosure, my kids, who are young, showed no interest in the Super Bowl, and so it wasn't mm-hmm. an issue for them. And
right.
I don't think they have. Well, they like Janet Jackson singing, I think, but I won't quiz them on that. And they didn't see this. But what about you? Did you did your kids watch, or would you have? If you
my kids are older. My kids are now adults. I was watching it with other adults, and I think there was a growing kind of people looking at each other during the entire halftime show, which seems so sexually provocative before they even got to the Jackson incident. So the crotch grabbing and all of those things, people, you know, what's this doing in the Super Bowl? And then when that happened, I think, it, as I said, it became kind of the incident to kind of symbolize the concern about this. But your question about parents, I think, is very important. In an interview I did with print media last week, a reporter said, well, there seems to be a real breakdown between people over 35 and under 35, that the people over 35 are upset, under 35, they don't seem to be upset. And I said, did you ask the people in your survey whether they were parents or not? And the person said, yes. I said, go back and see if there's a breakdown by parent versus non-parent. And that she called me back and said, you're absolutely right. 100% of the parents that saw it, regardless of their age, were concerned. And I think that's because when we become parents, those of us who are parents, when we become parents, then we start to look at the world through a lens of how do I help my child develop a set of attitudes and values that I think are important.
David
and
Walsh,
media is a part of that.
I'm going to have to interrupt you. We need to take
sure.
a short break. David Walsh is president and founder of the National Institute on Media and the Family in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We're talking about TV and its effect on us, and we're taking your calls at 800-989-TALK. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca, sitting in for Neil Conan. We're talking about indecency in broadcasting and whether it should concern us. Congress is holding hearings on the issue this week. Today we want to hear from you. Do you worry about what you see on TV or what your kids see? You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email is totn@npr.org. We've been talking with David Walsh, president and founder of the National Institute on Media and the Family in Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'd like to introduce Jane Brown. She's someone whose job it is to talk to teens about sex in the media. She's a journalism professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill and the editor of Sexual Teens, Sexual Media, Investigating Media's Influence on Adolescent Sexuality. She joins us now from member station WNUC. Welcome to the program.
Great to be here.
You do research on teens and the media. What do you ask them and what do they tell you?
We've been doing a survey, a five-year survey of 12 to 14-year-olds here in North Carolina, looking at both what they see in the media, and we look at all across the media, not only television, and what kinds of, and then we do analysis of the content that they're attending to most frequently. They're telling us that they see a lot in the media, and we're seeing that also by doing the analysis of what they tell us they attend to most frequently. We, after doing this analysis, we've jokingly among ourselves call it boobs, bellies, and butts, that across the media we've been studying, that's what we see.
And, I mean, what do you make of the Super Bowl incident? Have you talked with kids at all about that?
Only my own 13-year-old daughter, who didn't see it, but apparently all her friends at school are talking about it as well. And they're, frankly, surprised by the hoopla about it. And what I make of that is that we as adults rarely see what our kids are seeing. And I think David's exactly right that it was sort of a moment where popular teen culture came into the mainstream, and we all went, oh my goodness.
I see. You know, we were talking just before the break, I don't know if you were able to hear this discussion, about the sexual nature of the performance absent the breast bearing. I mean, it was pretty racy stuff. I have to say, I must be one of the few in America who missed it. I didn't see it, but I did see a still photo from it afterwards. Right. Was that, in your sense, as shocking or as a good representative?
No, this is what our kids are seeing all the time. Uh-huh. This is so typical, and clearly, if they're watching MTV, and lots of our kids are, that's what they see. And even if they're not watching MTV, they're seeing it in all sorts of any kind of music show. That's a typical behavior. So it's surprising to me what kind of shock there has been over this, because probably because I've been looking at a lot of it over the past couple of years, it looks to me like more of the same.
Let's ask our audience to join this discussion. Jamie in Mesa, Arizona, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Hi, a very interesting guest today. I'm a professional, very liberal, and so is my husband and a mom, and my daughter's 4.5. We watched the Super Bowl, and I was totally shocked, like you were talking about, before even the Janet Jackson incident happened. I really didn't even know what happened until they started talking about it. But she was totally unconcerned. All she watches is Disney and PBS. And I was just, the music videos that are with some of the made-for-TV movies are almost as bad as some of the MTV ones. And she's 4.5, and the level of, I think I shelter her as best I can. She goes to a Montessori school, you know, she's, But I was just shocked. The whole video before him, she just thought it was regular television. And she has a very sophisticated taste in clothes and things at 4.5, and I find that very upsetting. And number two, I don't understand the difference between pornography and indecency. Like watching Howard Stern on television, I think is pretty close to pornographic of things that happen on his show. And that's on regular cable. What are the rules? You know, when you subscribe to cable, if you pay for something, does that mean it doesn't have to be as shocking? And those are the two things I wanted to say.
Well, it's interesting. Before you go, though, Jamie, I want to ask you, when you described yourself originally as a liberal, how did you mean that term in this context?
I live in Phoenix, but my parents grew up in New York City. My parents lived together before they were married. I'm Catholic now, but in my early life, I never was in a strict preaching kind of moralistic background. I'm not saying if that's right or wrong. I'm just saying that I think I'm more liberal and more towards the freedom of speech issues and censoring books in our schools than most of the average Americans and certainly the average person in my community.
Okay. Jamie, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jeff in San Francisco, California. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks a lot for taking my call. I think this is a very interesting subject. My question is along the lines of the cable TV. I've been a big fan of Tech TV for a long time, and they've got a new show on there that is way, way outside of the norms as far as I'm concerned. I know it's cable, but my question is, for a show like this, this Unscrewed, which I can't let my kids watch. It's all porn and fecal matter humor. Who do you contact? I know the FCC doesn't seem to regulate the cable broadcasters, but who is it that you can call? The station's been unresponsive.
Well, it seems as if it's one of those issues you have to vote with your pocketbook and a little bit, or at least vote with your viewing habits. And just I think we've been talking earlier whether FCC has a role. But Jane Brown, I want to ask you. I mean, are his kids as upset and shocked and horrified and mortified as their parents are, or should they be, or what should be happening here?
Well, I think most kids aren't shocked because, as David said earlier, that many of them are desensitized to this kind of portrayal. But what I would also say is that parents play a huge role here in that they can be monitoring their children's media use. In one way is with the cable channels is to just block them from coming in the house. It's unfortunate that then you may not be able to watch what you want to watch, but that's what we've done with our daughter, who's 13. We just block MTV. We think it's inappropriate for her at this point. But as the first caller suggested, even Disney movies and promos for Disney movies and other kinds of materials, you're going to see even on what are supposedly the children's channels. So that's difficult. So the other thing I argue for is that parents have to be in an ongoing conversation with their children about their sexual beliefs and norms so that the child at least has the filter of their parents with them when they see this kind of material.
Jeff, thanks for the call. David Walsh, coming back to you again, I mean, this kind of material that is clearly upsetting to parents, it seems if you were able to take a snapshot over time of what was upsetting 20 years ago and what's upsetting today, you might see this shift. Does that strike you that way?
Oh, and the research that's been done clearly shows that the increase in sexually explicit and sexually provocative content is very pronounced in certain categories. For example, references to genitalia, either male or female, has increased some 700% over the last 15 years. And so there's no question that it's more explicit. And, you know, Jane was just talking about MTV. One of the things that I suggest to parents, you know, to get them to think about the power of this is that if you believe Sesame Street taught your 4-year-old something, then you'd better believe MTV is teaching your 14-year-old something. Because the influence doesn't stop when we come to a certain age. And so it is definitely very powerful stuff, and the content is shifting, as you're suggesting, Joe, and the data really show that, and particularly in programs that teenagers themselves watch. In programs in the top 20 programs rated for teen viewing, 83% have regular sexual content or sexual references or depictions. Sex and, unfortunately, the depiction of sex as recreation and the depiction of sex as disrespectful and even violent toward women is something that I think is really something that is starting to get people's attention, as it should.
We have an email here from Peg in Novi, Michigan, or it could be Novi, Michigan. Last night, my 12-year-old daughter was disturbed that the person who had her shirt ripped off was not allowed to go to the Grammys, but the person who ripped her shirt off was allowed. She got it. The troubling element of the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake issue. I agree with the media as becoming too sexually explicit. Peg writes, while I do not mind my children seeing sexuality that is kind, loving, respectful, and so on, such as in romantic movies, but men tearing off women's clothes in a non-loving setting seems to send a very negative message about what sexuality can be. Jane Brown, very typical
message too. And Jane, maybe you want to chime in here too.
Yeah.
The depiction of sex on MTV includes a lot of violence, and I think a lot of parents got a snapshot of that during the Super Bowl.
Jane,
I think that's one of the most important issues here. Is that Janet was the one punished and not Justin Timberlake. Mm-hmm. And this is what we see over and over again, that women's expression of their sexuality is punished but not men's. And so that's another recurrent theme in the kind of sexual portrayals we see in the media.
Joe, another word has just been introduced into the conversation, which I think is very, very important. That is the word sexuality. I think one of the raw nerves that this is touching in parents is that parents, particularly of kids as they reach their teenage years, start to get worried, concerned about sexual behavior. And yet we're not comfortable talking about that. Only 19% of teenagers report that they have thorough and ongoing conversations with their parents about sex. And oftentimes what we see in the media, what kids see in the media, is sex, not sexuality. Sexuality including relationships, values, attitudes, respect, all of the things that are really part of a healthy relationship. Just finishing up a book called Why Do They Act That Way? And it's about the teenage brain. And one of the things we need to understand is that one of the things that's happening during the adolescent years, and I think Jane's research is really helping us do that, is that this is the age at which kids are developing their attitudes that which they take into their adult life. And so these inputs become very, very important.
Go ahead, Jane Brown.
I think about it as what the media are doing with our children is teaching them what we would call sexual scripts or sexual schemas, or as David was talking about it, as norms. And if our kids are in a situation in which they're not getting very adequate information about this from schools or from their churches or from their parents, then the media become a very, very important, what I call, sex educator. And mm-hmm. what I'd like to see is that the media become healthier sex educators and mm-hmm. have our children's ideas, have our children's futures more in mind.
Okay, I'd like to thank you very much for joining me during this segment of the program. Jane Brown is a professor of journalism at the University of North Carolina. She joined us from member station WUNC in Chapel Hill. Thank you.
Thank you.
And also joining me today was David Walsh. He's the president and founder of the National Institute on Media and the Family in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He joined us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
And joining us now is Anthony Lang, a professor emeritus of anthropology at Elmira College in New York. He's on the phone from Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thanks for being on the program.
I'm very happy to be here.
And before we get started with that, I need to make a brief pause and say you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Dr. Lang, sorry for that slightly awkward beginning, but you're an anthropologist, and I don't know if you've heard very much of the discussion we've been having this afternoon, but you think there's something that everyone is missing in this discussion about Janet Jackson. What is it?
Well, I do. I think there's a kind of missing viewing this whole episode in a historical context. We have to look at the record long term. The Americans have come a long way from their Puritan roots as far as attitudes about public nudity. And the fact that Janet Jackson dared to do what she did, whatever her motives were, publicity stunt or what, should tell us something. I think we're concentrating more on the reaction to it, on the misgivings people have, the shock that people have. A professional, famous performers such as Miss Jackson would not have dared to do that 20 years ago. Back in the 60s, when bikinis came along, they were very shocking. Today, they're no longer very shocking. There's a kind of evolutionary process going on here, and The fact that so many people are upset is indicative of the fact that there is that trend toward increasing liberalization of public nudity. We see increasingly pictures of nude people in magazines, in movies, in mainstream publications, certainly on the internet and TV in general. And these things were not permissible just a decade or two ago. They would not have been even considered seriously by producers. Today, they are considered to be something you have to throw in order to keep the viewing public viewing, or the magazine buyers buying, and the moviegoers going. I mean, it's good for box office because the American public has an increasing appetite for seeing nudity.
I'm just wondering, this desire for that. You look at countries like France springs to mind, and it just seems that they, I would think a lot of French people would just be sort of surprised that it was even an issue. It seems other countries don't take this well. They don't seem to be as stunned, shocked, or if I may use the word titillated, by nudity as Americans seem to.
Well, there are some countries where there would be even more indignation, Saudi Arabia perhaps being case in point, but right. You're absolutely right as far as France is concerned, and most of Europe for that matter. In fact, I don't know any part of Europe where that wouldn't be the case, that they would wonder, what are these silly Americans getting so upset about? What is the issue? Why is it such a big deal?
I have a letter here from Robin in Northeast Illinois, an email, who writes... have your guests ever heard any foreign commentary on the halftime show? It's common to see bare-breasted women advertising everything from yogurt to laundry soap in Europe. I'm curious to know what the rest of the world thinks of this event as well as our reactions to it. I guess we've sort of answered that question a little bit, but have you heard any other reaction from other countries in this? Of course, Super Bowl is watched around the world. I suppose the halftime show is as well.
Yes, no, I've not. Fortunately, I can only... guess what the reaction would be in terms of what they've shown are their inclinations in the past. Certainly the Europeans can't be... they think of we're pretty silly over here when it comes to our concerns about sex, our concerns about nudity, and equating the two even. They think Americans are terribly old-fashioned and Puritan in their attitudes.
Yeah. What do you think about that question that came up, not so much about the nudity, but the violence that was involved in what Justin Timberlake evidently attempted to do in taking off her blouse?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think the violence is a separate issue, but of course they often are very difficult to separate. If Janet Jackson had reached over and removed that part of her bodice by herself, without any intervention from a male figure, I think you'd still be getting the same kind of negative reaction and indignation.
Okay, thank you. We have to take a break. Coming up after the break, an explanation of one of the mysteries of the political season, superdelegates. We'll respond to some of your emails about political primaries and get an update on the weekend's political events. NPR's Ken Rune joins us. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington. I didn't have time before the break to thank Anthony Lang. Anthony Lang is a professor emeritus of anthropology at Elmira College in New York. He joined us from his home in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Thanks for joining us and giving us your insight today.